Hello, my name is Juan de Castro, and you're listening to Making Risk Flow. Every episode, I sit down with my industry-leading guests to demystify digital risk flows, share practical knowledge, and help you use them to unlock scalability in commercial insurance. Last week, I took part in a panel of Commercial Lines Innovation Europe in London. We talked about how insurers can embrace flexibility and digitization to better serve SMEs. My co-panelists were fantastic. Helen Truman, Chief Underwriting Officer, Small Commercial from Chubb, and Ian Fantozzi, Chief Executive Officer from Beazley Digital. Have a listen and hope you enjoyed as much as I did.
Let's get started. Maybe just set a baseline for this discussion. And I'd like to ask the panel, what are the important things that SME businesses value and what are their expectations? So what are you dealing with in this market? Juan, can we start with you?
Sure, I can start by sharing some of the takeaways from a lot of the research we did back at Hiscox on what was important to SMEs when purchasing insurance, right? And I think the first thing to keep in mind is quite often in the SME clients, the person purchasing insurance is not an insurance or a finance expert, right? That's obviously quite different from large enterprises. So what is important to them when buying insurance? There were three main themes, right? One is get what we call the frictionless experience, right? So an easy process to purchase insurance. The second one was about getting help to understand what insurance products they needed. And the third one was, once I've purchased insurance, let me just focus back on my business. And let me expand on quickly on the three of them, right? So on the frictionless experience, that looked like kind of a process to buy insurance that was fast, that was convenient, that was to some extent worry-free. And what it did not look like was kind of the traditional purchasing process where we asked them 100 questions. But more importantly, many of them, they don't even understand. And we faced that ourselves at Hiscox, right? Where we would ask them even very simple questions like, what's your revenue, right? Clients would get confused. They're like, oh, do you mean my last year's revenue? My projected this year revenue? Next, like, and actually we saw, even in the direct-to-consumer business, we saw many of them falling through the online channel and calling us just because simple questions like that, they would not understand them, right? So I think the first focus is the buyer is typically not an insurance professional, so make it simple, easy to understand what they need to answer. I think the second one is about help me understand what I need, right? Is help me, what does a company like myself, let's imagine I'm a marketing consulting company, like what does marketing consulting company need to buy? What products, right? So that could be done obviously in the broker intermediated channels through brokers, but in the online direct to consumer, you need to help the clients understand what they need. And what it does not look like is when we are asking clients, do you want professional indemnity? Many clients don't understand what professional indemnity means, right? So we need to help them understand the risks and what products they need. And the last bit is about, let me focus on my business. Big feedback from SMEs is, I want to focus my time on growing my business, right? So help me manage the risk, but make it really kind of worry-free. Give me products or services that help me mitigate those risks, but don't give me a number of exclusions that I don't understand that force me to think about them throughout the whole year, right? Where I need to be focusing on growing my business.
Okay, so a lot of SMEs will then go to an intermediary or a broker in order to get that assistance. Ian, what's the major issues in the intermediary and broker channel? What are they expecting?
Yeah, well, Beazley is a specialist insurance carrier. So all of our business is placed through intermediaries. And in the SME segment, firstly, you have to recognize that not all brokers or marketplaces are at the same place technologically. So when I talk about marketplace, I'm talking about regions. So in the UK and Germany, for example, a lot of business gravitates around digital market hubs or broker pools. Whereas in the US, there's a prevalence for using email submissions. So two quite different ways of placing business. So the first thing is to have a multi-channel strategy if you can. And by that, I'm talking about having APIs in place, APIs connected to market hubs, portals, and some kind of email digitization solution, if you can. And I'm sure Juan can talk more about that, because that's something that Cytora does. At Beazley Digital, we call that meeting the customer where they want to be met. So it's trying to make your products and services available through those different channels. The second thing to consider is that to be commercially viable, writing SME business, it has to be done in volume, both for brokers and for carriers. And whenever you've got high volume and full in trays of submissions, it has to be processed quickly. So speed of response is absolutely critical in an intermediated market, because it's all about moving volumes quickly. So it's about having the right infrastructure in place to deal with that. And then finally, and this is particularly important in the intermediated space, is that brokers understand what your underwriting appetite is, because you can waste a lot of everyone's time if you're declining a ton of business and you haven't properly educated your brokers on what you are actually prepared to write. So it's giving that right level of access to expertise in your business so you can keep educating on the products and your underwriting appetite that you have. So I think it's probably those three areas that I would focus on.
Okay, I can see the entirely the logic of that. So Helen, you've got a direct business. What's the major issues on the direct side?
Yeah, so I think it's very relevant to what Ian and Juan have both covered in terms of what the customer wants, and they can be the issues as well if you're not meeting those expectations. So it's really about providing the convenience of a digital direct product. And the customers in this space really want it immediately. They want it to be relevant and they want it to be affordable. So it's about having that flexibility of product and payment plans, etc. So they want the cover that they need at this point in time for their business. So it may be through an embedded journey where they're buying the product, for example. So the, you know, some of the issues you would face is about, you know, making sure the product's relevant at that point in time when they want to buy the insurance, because they're buying it for a specific purpose. So having a very traditional flat P&C product isn't going to be, you know, meeting the expectations of the customer. Having a slow transaction isn't going to meet the expectations of the customer, because they want it immediately. They want immediate quote and bind in that and policy issuance. So, you know, you need to have the platform and the technology there.
Okay, so the purchasing experience for the customer is clearly very, very important. But what ultimately, from your perspective, what's more important, the purchasing experience or the product? Ian, what's your view on that?
So in my view, if you want to win new business, then you need to have a great purchasing experience. If you want to retain or renew business, you need to have a great product. So it's not a cop-out on the answer, but they are both very important. But there's no point in having a great product if no one can buy it or you make it too difficult. So in thinking the SME segment, I put the purchasing experience as the area we focus the most on. Again, speaking as a specialist insurer, that has definitely not always been the case. We've in the past gone, well, we've got great products and the brokers are prepared to come to us, so we can rely heavily on that. That is no longer the case. And in a highly digitized market, you've got to get the right level of investment on the purchasing experience. The only other thing I would add, and this is kind of a maybe a third pillar, I feel like we're answering everything in threes today. That must be the management consultant in still there. The other aspect is to have a really good service center or set of service centers in place. And I think Helen touched upon the fact that the insured is constantly changing. Their revenue is going up. There are endorsements and the risk changes. And having a service center to answer all those kind of queries is as important as having the underwriting and the technology and those investments in place.
That being said, we all know that, you know, a fast response is a sort of crucial component of great customer experience. And in terms of an insurer trying to maximize their conversions, that's going to be a key element of what you're going to focus on. How can insurers improve their performance in this area? I mean, and I'm talking there both in the direct channel and in the broker channel. Helen, would you like to take that one?
Yeah, sure. I mean, for me, it's all about delivering the digital experience via a technology platform and that speed and experience through technology. And I know yesterday we spoke a lot about that throughout the sessions. But at Chubb, we offer distribution partners and customers through our Chubb Studio. And this allows them to access off-the-shelf products and services. And, you know, we've spoken about this, but it's integrated in a very simple way through a widget or APIs. You know, by innovating and developing in this space, you know, you can then scale and deploy across regions. That's where you really get that scalability. And every time you develop the platform, every customer or partner is getting the benefit of that. So for me, you know, there's a lot around the platform. I think value-add services is huge in that space as well. And we'll probably come on to that a little bit later. But obviously, claims has got to be spoken about when we're in this point of discussion. And, you know, part of the digital proposition also can be the value-added risk prevention solution. So you can continue to develop your products and services and experience for the customers and the partners through those value-added services and access to immediate claims. So it's all interconnected. But yeah, for me, it comes back down to the technology platform and the scalability of that.
Okay. One, you're the technology man here. What's your thoughts about the technology aspects of this?
If you think about it, we deep dive to understand why the current experience is not fast. There's issues around appetite and policies are not affordable. A lot of it comes down to how manual the underwriting processes are, right? So if you look at, especially in the broker intermediate business, every submission, every risk requires an underwriter to take a look at typically at an email, open a number of attachments, understand the risk, and then realizing it's out of appetite and going to the next one. So it's a really inefficient process. So what we're seeing, and this is what Cytora does, but what we're seeing with some of the leading insurers is they're evolving to digital risk flows, right? So where technology, those technical platforms Helen was referring to, do the heavy lifting of analyzing the risk, right? And that allows things like, for example, the out of appetite challenge goes away, right? Because technology can automatically identify the out of appetite submissions and not even present them to underwriters, right? So that addresses part of the challenge of poor expense ratios because of poor productivity. Why this is possible now and wasn't possible 5 years ago is because there have been a number of breakthroughs in technology in the last 5 years, right? If you think about the ability to, so nowadays, if you want to be able to automatically evaluate a risk, you need to combine risk data from a number of sources. So data from the client that comes from the broker, you need external data to understand peril scores for property risks or company data for liability risks, right? You also need to do things which until very recently only humans could do, which is like deeply understand what activities a client is involved in, right? Which is one of the major drivers of risk selection. And all those technologies, which would require a heavy component of kind of artificial intelligence, were not available a few years ago. We didn't have OCR or good OCR technologies until a few years ago. Now that's almost commoditized, right? Google, Amazon provide the core technology, being able to geolocate properties, or even being able to have low code, no code configurations to be able to quickly adapt to changing market conditions. So there have been a number of breakthroughs in the, I would say, in the last 3-4 years that combined, I think, enable insurers to do most of the risk analysis automatically and drives a faster response to the client and also higher productivity.
Okay, so we're hearing about new technologies. Ian, you've got to take this new technology and make it happen in your business. You've got to make it real. Move it from a vendor telling you that this is what you can do to turning it into reality. What's your thought on that?
It makes a huge difference if you can have a true cross-functional team in place. And when people talk about agile, you often go, well, if you get a true cross-functional team together, you can make things happen quicker. If you can do it properly and actually get the underwriters and the tech people and the ops people all literally sitting together virtually or physically and with the same set of objectives, you can turn things around much more quickly and design products and adjust to the market much more quickly. So in terms of making the tech happen, that would be an area to focus on.
How good are insurers at identifying new business opportunities from data insight? One, what's your thoughts on that? You've obviously worked with a few.
Yeah, so I think the answer is historically probably not very good at identifying opportunities from data. But I think things, again, have changed quite significantly in the last few years. And let me perhaps give you an example of things that we're doing with some of our clients, right, which I think will bring this to life, which is one of the best sources of insights for an insurer is the submission flow, is the data from kind of risks to quote. That if you think, quite often insurers only capture data from the submissions they end up quoting. Typically, insurers quote somewhere between 20 and 40% of the incoming risks. So the insurers are missing on the other 60 to 80% of information. And there's a lot of really good information there that can help data-driven decisions. And let me give you a couple of examples, right? So always a big area of discussion at the board level is how do you grow through appetite expansion, right? And then the biggest blocker to expand appetite is good data, right? So if you digitize your full submission intake and you are able to capture all the information, you can identify what type of clients are you currently receiving but not being able to quote, right? So like what segments are you receiving a high volume of submissions, but they are currently outside of appetite. And often out of appetite because there's a perception or a hypothesis that they are not profitable, obviously, or there's no underwriting expertise, but often because they are not profitable. Very often in that submission flow, you also get the historical loss experience for those clients, which is something that insurers have not analyzed so far. Now, if you digitize a full intake, you can start identifying, okay, I'm receiving whatever, 10,000 engineering risks a year, which are out of appetite. And I can start correlating the loss behavior within that population and identify subsegments of engineers that might be profitable and you might want to start underwriting. So this is something that probably 5 years ago, I don't know of any insurer that was using this submission data to inform these opportunities. And this is something that insurers are starting to do now.
So look, I'm going to cut right to the bottom line here now. Is the loss ratio getting better for those organizations that are using data well? Ian, what are you seeing?
I hope so. Yeah.
Very good answer.
Yeah, I mean, we've been using data for years to help our loss ratio, particularly in the large risk segment. We've been cat modeling for a long time, but that extends to the small commercial property space. In recent years, we've been using the cyber realistic disaster scenario data and cloud aggregation data to look for correlations in losses. And that's led to changes to our cyber wordings for systemic risk at a more granular level and sticking with cyber. The more recent data in the last couple of years on exposed ports, network ports, not having multi-factor authentication in place, they've all presented opportunities to spot correlations with losses, both in terms of frequency and severity. So we're definitely, as an industry, getting better and better at looking at or turning to the data rather than just looking at the probability, looking at the statistics alone of whether we're going to incur losses or not. The only thing I would add in the SME space is a lot of our challenges are actually on just getting good quality data about businesses. And, you know, Juan talked a bit about what ways we can do that. But just being able to identify the true business activity of an SME is a day-to-day challenge, or, you know, an hourly challenge. You're getting lots of transactions. And for example, you could find a business categorizes itself as a financial institution, all office-based. And then if you delve a little bit deeper, that they just happen to have some kind of warehouse somewhere else that may be in a cat-exposed location, or increasingly they have some kind of hosting capability that's cloud-based. These things can come out when you're underwriting the risk. Obviously, in an SME underwriting environment, we need to be able to do that super quickly. And preferably instantaneously using data sources. And so I think a lot of the progress I'm seeing with external data providers is trying to help insurers get better quality data about what is the SME actually doing as their true business activity or activities. And then we can use that accurate data to correlate against loss experience.
And perhaps just to build on Ian's point, which I think it's a very relevant topic about understanding what the client does. I think this is a great example where the industry is moving from where it was a few years ago of just purely classifying clients on a given activity. So insurers would use an Ikes or a SIC code to say, okay, this is a brewery, whatever, right? Which is like almost like a one-to-one classification. But that missed all the nuance of SME, right? SMEs typically are involved in a number of different activities. And what correlates with loss ratio is not so much the main activity, but the 10 activities they are involved in, right? Because it might be a brewery, but they might also, as you said, have manufacturing locations and off-license shops, whatever, right? So the way technology is enabled to be much more nuanced about what the client does is by moving from a single trait classification into understanding, is there any signal that a given company is involved in certain activities, right? And I think that is something also that we are doing with some clients, which is there a signal that regardless of what the main activity is, this client is involved in payments processing or in blockchain mining, whatever it is, right? And I think those nuances about signals about specific activities that correlate with poor loss behavior is something that, again, that wasn't available a few years ago.
What I think I'm hearing here is using better data, you're saying this in a very conservative way, is likely to improve the loss ratio because you're writing better business, better information, whatever. Helen, would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think it's been covered really well by both Ian and Juan. I think, you know, it's going to be a continuation of improvement as data improves and more clarity. And as I said, we're constantly evolving those data feeds and making sure they're relevant and also using, complementing that with external data. So, yeah, I agree with everything that my fellow panelists have said on this answer.
Fabulous. Great loss ratios all round for everybody who's doing digital. Okay, look, we've got a great panel of people here. I'm going to throw the room open to our audience. It's your opportunity to pose questions to people who really know what they're talking about. I've already got one raised hand even before I finish. So if you could say your name and your company.
My name is Marius Lazia, representing FintechOS. And I have a question for you. Both you and Juan highlighted the need of education. Juan was speaking about the need to educate the clients to understand what a professional indemnity coverage means. But you also mentioned the need to educate the brokers. And I find it really challenging. And I really want to understand, how did you manage to tackle this problem?
It's an ongoing effort, really. You can do things very simply, and we call them cheat sheets, by literally providing packs of information about your product set. And in there is your product appetite. Running webinars increasingly to educate the broker networks on the risks that are presented out there and about the products and services that you offer. And also, I mentioned the importance of having service centers in place. It doesn't necessarily need an underwriter to educate the broker. A lot of stuff in terms of underwriting appetite can be communicated by our service centers. And even with chatbots now, as well, if you're trying to hit a particularly wide audience. So those are the sorts of things that we do to try and help educate about our underwriting appetite and our products.
Helen, any thoughts from your side?
Yeah, and I think it depends on your distribution route, right? Because we spoke about these multidisciplinary teams. So sometimes I think it's just an understanding of the transaction and, you know, the technologically minded piece of it for brokers. And I think, you know, that's just drawing upon the different, you know, individuals in your team and in the broking environment as well, as you're discussing this. But I think in terms of product, yeah, we, you know, cheat sheets and just some tailored training if there's an element of coverage that they're, you know, struggling with. But, you know, I think it does go back to the, you know, a lot of this is about immediate transaction. So if they do have a specific question at that point in time of the transaction, it's about having that contact center, as, you know, as Ian said, to answer that. Because quite often, if it's the customer that's asking the question, you know, they want to buy that insurance at that exact moment, they need the answer to the question straight away. So it, I suppose it just depends in terms of the transaction as to where we're looking to educate. But I think, you know, in terms of digital and the trading piece, it's about drawing on the experience within the insurer's team, the broker's team. And I think with the customer, it's just about having immediate response to the question at that point in time of the transaction.
Okay, thank you. We have time for one more quick question, if anybody wants it over here. Yeah.
My name is Alessandro from Rocotion. We work with a lot of brokers and we are very digitalized, but they complain that we ask them to do our job, okay? Because we ask them too much information. And I think that they're not wrong. And all the discussions you explained us, everything is digitalized. We have a lot of data feed. The data needs to be analyzed. My specific question is that why not using open banking data, like through the PSD2 directive, to check the bank accounts and see, for example, I paid R5, so it means that I have 5 office buildings. To know how many employees I have, it's easy. If I paid, I don't know, 30 salaries, I see it, how much it is. Is this for you as technology people or insurers, is this the future that we do the same than banks in analyzing the financial data to appreciate our risk? The technology is there, it's just not used today.
First of all, yeah, part of the product design in the digital space is to get the application form as short as you possibly can, you know, and using external data sources. So, you know, I think we're all focused on that. Second area is by connecting to broker pools or broker hubs, market hubs, that does make it a lot easier for brokers because they're, in theory, keying in once into their back office system and it's going out to, you know, 10 different markets and they're all coming back with hopefully automated responses. So we're definitely seeing that as a fairly major evolution. On open banking, I would definitely like to use more real-time data from open banking. And in fact, there's a lot of information coming from cloud providers about business activity that's occurring on the cloud. And in theory, you can dynamically price and adjust the coverage on that basis. I think these things will come. Right now, what I'm seeing is it's very difficult to work out how to price business with all this data that's coming in. And it sounds still a bit old-fashioned, but still, if you can get that right set of data coming up front and applying a price and a coverage, it is much easier to model than having a constant flow of 1,000 data fields coming in from open banking or cloud usage and then continually adjusting the price. It's untested, so it's quite difficult to develop the insurance product. But I'm just being honest with you, that's where we are today. It's definitely a direction that the industry is likely to take.
Just to build on something that also Ian mentioned, I think when using external data, I think there's a difference between using external data to do risk selection and using external data as part of a legal contract with a client, right? So in the statement of facts that you share with the client, you need to capture their information that has been provided by the client. You cannot just assume they've got 5 properties. They need to capture that there are 5 locations, right? So I think that would be a challenge. You know, any data point which needs to be part of the statement of fact and the contractual contract with the client, I think it's more challenging to get it externally, right? Because the client needs to approve it. I think all that data can definitely be used for a risk selection. So for you, the insurer's analysis of, is this a good risk or not? And I think that is where we see more insurers using that type of data for.
Okay, well, I think we're getting towards the end of our time. As I said in my previous panel, I like people to be able to have a takeaway. We are about to break for lunch over here. So I'm going to go around and ask everybody that I meet when I'm having lunch what you remember from this presentation. So be aware, pay attention, because you've got to have an answer. To our panel, I would like to ask you to tell us the one thing that you want people to remember. Ian, can I start with you?
I would just say it's always good practice to put yourselves in the shoes of your customer you know, whenever you're kind of designing a product or making changes to digital channels, it's always just imagine yourself being on the other side of the fence and buying from you. And that kind of helps you focus on the doing the right things.
Okay, walk in your customer's shoes. Very, very good piece of advice. Helen, what would you advise everybody to remember?
Very common theme here. Following on from Ian's final thought is, for me, it's all about having a customer-centric approach. Exactly as Ian just said, you know, thinking about the customer first is, you know, in terms of the journey, the product, everything you're doing.
Okay, and one.
Just to provide a slightly different angle, we talk a lot about data and there are tangible benefits that insurers can capture today from that data. And I think the example I mentioned, for example, as kind of submission data is a gold mine of information. So think about how can you use that to kind of grow the business.
Okay, thank you very much indeed. Thank you to Ian, to Helen, to Juan. Much appreciated.
Making Risk Flow is brought to you by Cytora. If you enjoy this podcast, consider subscribing to Making Risk Flow in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast so you never miss an episode. To find out more about Cytora, visit cytora.com. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.